Kirtan is spreading all over the world now. It's kind of a big thing. In New York, a lot of people are involved in kirtans. There's a whole kirtan scene. We are certainly not the only ones anymore on the kirtan stage. There are lots of people into kirtan from all kinds of backgrounds, from hardcore professionals to the more devotional kirtan. I guess we are in the last category. Because for us, kirtan is not a performance, but it's a meditation. Meditation is something everybody does, knowingly or unknowingly. You're meditating on something, thinking about something, and particularly when the mind begins to focus on something, we speak about meditation. Meditation on an exam. It's like obsessive thinking, completely focused. Anxiety. That's, of course, not the most pleasant meditation. I myself, I hate exams. Always did, and avoided them, to tell you the truth. That's how I wound up like this. But leaving them aside, life is in itself, of course, can be perceived from various angles. Some are looking at life as a playground, a big playground where you just sort of, check it all out and see what's going on. Others are seeing life as an educational type of process where you're supposed to learn a lesson, whatever it is. The lessons of life, and you get like books about it, you buy like these sort of handy little pocket things and some wise words. Others are seeing it like a ladder. I want to get to the top of the ladder. Some are rather an ambition, a lot of ambition, something to achieve. We want to go somewhere. We want to reach great heights. So one can see that an outlook on life really makes quite a difference. Quite a difference. For example, in the Middle Ages, if there was if someone would get sick, so it was the work of the devil or possibly some witchcraft, and start looking around the room if he could put anyone on the scales to see if they were too light. And nowadays, you don't think like that so much anymore. Now it's more viruses or these kind of things, bacteria start covering your mouth. Someone sneezes, you move to another table. Like that, we are living in a different paradigm. We're living now in the bacteria and the viruses, and they're everywhere, even on your computer. What to do? So, like that, different perceptions, different outlooks. In the East, there is the outlook of karma, of course, not so Eastern anymore. It came to the West a long time ago, and practically anybody knows what karma is these days. Action, reaction, basically, whatever you do, it creates reactions for the future. And what happens to you now is what you created in the past. Nothing happens by chance. We all together are responsible for the weather. Did you ever think about that? Vedic texts are interesting because Vedic texts say anabhavanti bhutani parjanya kala sambhava yakti bhavati sambhava and something more yakti kama samudbhava, which basically means that rain relates to the behavior of human beings. So nature behaves according, responds according to our behavior. It's not that nature acts by chance according to the Vedic text. It says whatever human beings do, nature will respond in a particular way. Well, it's an interesting theory. Another one amongst the other ones, and another perspective. And why not look through the Vedic perspective? I think that's one thing the West did. And if I say the West, I say, well, it started European-based, and then colonialism went all over the world. Right? And the European worldview became the predominant worldview. And anything that was not European was sort of pushed to the side in the world. So, as it happened in Africa, which some of you may know better than me, it so happened in India in the same way. The early Indologists went to India and they sort of, well, decided that that Indian culture should be converted, they should all be converted to Christianity. That was the agenda. And therefore there was a system to make all Indian culture look as primitive, backward, superstitious, and so on. And the education, and what they did is, of course, they started educational institutions to proliferate this philosophy, and quite successful in a way, because they infiltrated Indian culture, although Christianity didn't spread so widely in India. But what happened was, is that these days, we're still stuck, when we study philosophy, if you go into this university and you study philosophy, then it means Western philosophy, basically European philosophy. And then it went to America and this, but it's basically that, right? Instead of world philosophy. I mean, you can see something is awkward, you know, because really, if you would objectively study philosophy, you would study world philosophy. You know, and if you don't, then it means that there's something biased going on, right? I mean, if you really study, and just from an objective point of view, if you study a subject, then logically speaking, whatever is available in the world, we should study. We don't do that. No. Indian philosophy is not considered philosophy because it doesn't have the same systematic approach that we have in philosophy in the West. Fine, you know, good. It has another approach. But it works quite well. In fact, the East is full of deep philosophical consideration. So, therefore, the Vedic perspective. The Vedic perspective, as relevance to the world, is kind of undervalued in the world. And with that we have a problem. Because you see, the Western world, well, for a large percentage, bought into the playground outlook. Oh, it's a wonderful world. We're gonna have a great time. And life is just a big experiment. Yeah, that's true, that is the Western culture. A big experiment. Where it goes, nobody knows. Oh, It started with a grain revolution around the beginning of the 19th century. Steam engines and all kinds of big machines came in, and boy, industrialization changed the world. And we turned away from the traditional model. People for thousands of years, and basically all over the world, lived on a lifestyle based on an agrarian-based culture. And just since 200 years, a little less, we have left that behind. Slowly got rid of it. Slowly destroyed the farms. Systematically mechanized them into agro factories. Of course, you know, then we made more headway and we managed to create a global economy. And that was a great thing, because now we can all wear clothes from China, which is, you know, makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Really? Oh, good idea. And yes, things developed further. Then, you know, we always had this desire to be the rulers. The rulers of the world. But not only like, you know, in the medieval fashion, but like where kings are seated on great thrones. I mean, that is, of course, a great kick. But bigger than that, better than that, is to play God. So, it never really, that game, the God game, that never really took off. But in recent times, we've done really well. We made some progress with the God game, because now we've got genetic engineering. And that's cool. That's really cool. You can play creator. Oh, man, I am the creator of creatures, as I wish in my test tube. And yes, your tomatoes have a bit of a sting. That is because we put scorpion genes in them. Those big fat potatoes, those extra large ones. You know why they're so big and fat? Yes, which genius? Three times. Guess. Big, fat, and round. What could it be? P-I-G. Pig genius. And yes, you eat those potatoes regularly, and gradually the nose is becoming a little bit more round. And you've got a nose. A little itch at the tailbone, because the tiny little curl comes out and you cause it an interesting, damn interesting. It's a good game. A good game. So, modern technology offers us wonderful opportunities to really take this game of taking the world as a playground a step further. Now, we are in the God game, and it's a good game. Well, of course, unfortunately, all these things lead to complications, as did the so-called Grey Revolution, where, you know, we started the big machines, right? Oh geez, you know, the drinking water got a little bit polluted, the air also somewhat hard to breathe. In fact, the pollution took exorbitant features. It doesn't matter, just keep on eating. A Greenpeace poster told me that the amount of chemicals in the daily food package equal or are an equivalent of 20 aspirins a day. Interesting information. but so what are we, where are we going and what are we doing? Or a better question maybe, not where are we going, what are we doing? Where we're going, we know. We're cutting the rainforests like at kilometers a day, chainsaw saws. Every day, a few kilometers or less rainforest. Good stuff. We know where we're going. Deforestation. It's supposed to be somewhere 2040, 2050 that it's really gonna show. And we know other resources are running out. And we know there will be a shortage of water. And we know all these things. But that's what all the ecological conferences have told us. Mm-hmm. So the question where we're going, we're not asking. The question, why are we doing it? That's a good question. You know, imagine at the dinner table, next to the pepper and salt shaker, I put a spray can with doom. And doom. You know this stuff, right? Doom. I put it there so that you can spray your vegetables. Ah, that's ridiculous. I know. It's not required. It's already pre-sprayed. It's okay. It's very bad. Put the doom can on the table. That's ridiculous. So, like this, and I'm not going to say much more about what we're doing. I'm just going to ask one question. Why are we doing this? Is that a question to ask that in my mind it is? And in my mind it goes like, why are we doing this? And why did we invent machines that move us from one place to another, that fumigate the air that we breathe? Why? And then we get lung cancer. Why? Why are we doing this? Why? I'm not going to answer this question. I'm just going to ask you this question to take it home, to dust it off. But then, it's our culture. So, for whatever reason our culture is doing it, I think it's interesting to look at other cultures. In the I came across a Vedic text, and in this text there was an interesting reference about one king who was having a very fortified city. He had around his city electric fences. I mean, it's pretty modern, you know. This is in text of 5,000 years old. Text we find reference to electric fences. Go, wow, ahead of their time, sort of. Not only did they speak of electric fences, they spoke about walls of gas. A little bit difficult to make, I guess, but they had it. So that whole defense security thing, which included like high-tech arrangements, you know, walls of gas, that would be even nowadays considered pretty high-tech. So, and then it said in the same text that this king was not following the Vedic culture. And this king was considered demoniac, destructive. And the Vedic culture was, in the same text, rejecting electricity. They said, electricity is the source of evil. So, here I am today, in a modern university, 2012, the 20th of December is approaching, but in that aside, 2012, saying that electricity is evil. Why? Why? It said because it destroys nature. And the problem is that man itself is part of nature. We're building this whole unnatural environment, and then we forget that we ourselves are products of nature. So the Vedic culture takes us back to, it's more aimed towards the roots, and who are we as real beings? Who are we truly? Then, of course, it sees those roots on various levels. You can say, based on the Sanskrit, the word Atman. The word Atman is a Sanskrit word for the self. And there are different understandings, because Atman means mind, or it means body, or spirit. So that's where the whole slogan mind, body, spirit came from, actually from the Sanskrit root Atma. Because there are different conceptions of the self. Some people think, this is me. Me. Yeah? This hunk of flesh, you, with that charming smile, that's me. And others say, no, I'm not the body. The body is just a vehicle, a yantra, a machine. I'm in this machine. When a part breaks, you can change it, take it to the garage, and get a new heart or whatever. A bolt here and a bolt there. A machine. So it's the driving, some say, the mind, the more subtle force. That's us. Vedic texts say no. More subtle than that is the soul, the spiritual spark of life. So, when men and women unite sexually, then there are bodily secretions, to call it that, that kind of mix. And the cocktail, when it is of good substance and good quality, right, as we know, can produce children. But one thing that we don't learn in the biology classes is that what transpires when these chemical reactions take place between the secretions, just then, from the subtle plane, a living being is being captured. And in this way, the alliance of body and spirit comes into being. In a very minute state, then growing into a big round belly and eventually a baby that comes crying into this world. And I would like to ask you, why do babies cry? Why don't they come out of the womb singing, Mommy, I love you? You think about that one. So, in this way, the Vedic understanding says, we exist on different levels. We exist on the level of body, we exist on the level of mind, we exist on the level of soul, and it is said, the existence of the soul is eternal. Therefore, that's the root. The body is temporary. Therefore, that's a temporary covering, a machine which breaks down in the course of time and then is to be replaced for another one. As our Pythagoras told us, I always used to think in school, in my high school days, that the most boring personality was Pythagoras. A squared plus B squared is Z squared. Never failed, in my case, to put me asleep. But later I found out he was more interesting than I thought, because he was remembering previous birth. He was remembering that in a previous birth he had been a woman. He remembered that he had been an animal. He remembered that he had been a plant. He remembered the whole series of births. So, kind of an interesting guy. These are the kind of people I would like to meet, who remember their last birth, to talk about it. See if we can check anything. Where did you live? What was your name? What was the house like? And then we'll go and check it out. So yes, the soul is getting involved with matter, and thus the soul gets involved with the body. Therefore, from the Vedic perspective, it's a waste of time to play around with material things only. Oh, a little bit you can play, but the Vedic perspective is this: the soul that was free somehow or other became captured in this body, which is subjected to time. The soul is meant to be free. So the Vedas say that is the priority. Get out of this world. Go to the higher realm. So it offers a path to the higher realm. Basically, an elevation of consciousness. The process for doing that is called yoga. That's really what yoga is. Yoga is not and bend your back and touch your toes with the tip of your nose and all these kind of things. That's not yoga. That's gymnastics. Which is sort of, yoga has something, really something deeper. Yoga has something to do with consciousness, lifting the consciousness. Because consciousness is the key to reality. Because it is through consciousness that you perceive things. If your consciousness is it, it's all beautiful, it's all wonderful. Or if your consciousness is like, I hate the world, it's hell, it's devastating, it's a horrible place, I gotta get out of this dump. It's consciousness. Consciousness. We see through consciousness. In the pure state, when we are not compromised with lust in this world, then the consciousness is full of love and kindness towards all. In the contaminated state, the consciousness becomes more self-centered. I am mine. Me. Starring me. I am the center of all my dreams. You can also play in them, but only for my pleasure. Yes. Dream about me. But when the consciousness becomes elevated, then one becomes full of love and begins to give instead of take, and begins to focus on the happiness of all. So Vedic culture is more concerned with those kind of things. Well, you can't cover the Vedas in 5 minutes, so I'm not trying. I've just sort of sketched a few societies. One, where you don't have to spray it for doom, it's already done. Good. Another one, where electricity is considered a waste of time, and where it says, live in harmony with nature, live in harmony with the environment, live in harmony with everyone. Don't just exploit all the gold for me. So I think, to summarize, the Vedic culture has something to offer to the West, and that's basically what I come to offer to you in this university today, and say, Don't let the biased Indologists of the past, don't let the post-colonial defects still limit you today. Shake it off. Throw off the chains of censure, of information control, and investigate what the world has to offer. Don't forget the Vedas, and it's quite a library. Quite a library. It's not one book. It's a library. There's a lot of stuff out there. Darwin borrowed a few ideas from the Origin of the Species, and so did others. It's a library. Worth having a look. And that's all I'm saying today. Have a look. Have a look at the Vedic perspective. Okay, I've come to the end of my presentation. If some of you would like to give a response, that would be really nice. Otherwise, I can also waffle on. I'm a good waffler. I can. So whatever you like. But if someone has a question or a comment, you're most welcome. Yeah.
I don't believe that Western society can exist if everyone is not ignorant. Like, Western society grants ignorance.
You don't believe that Western society can exist if, and then I missed a few words.
I don't believe Western society can exist without ignorance.
Without ignorance. Because it's a society which is not based on trying for the happiness of all. It's an exploitive society. So there's a class of men, we have to keep them in ignorance, and they, so that we can exploit them. That's the idea. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, the modern world is an exploitive world. No. And that's the fundamental issue. It's like, production consumption society. For what? All the junk, do you really need it all? Someone gave me an electric shaver, but it was one that you could have a wet shave, so it has blades, but the blades vibrate, so you can enjoy the thing of having a shaving cream. And if you have an electric shaver, you may as well throw away the blades, right? But no, an electric shaver with blades and everything, the fiber, so you can have the pleasure of using gel on your face. It's ecstasy. I recommend it. In the morning, just smear some gel or scrape it off, and now all electric. What ecstasy. Total rubbish. But you gotta have it. And you don't have one? Oh my god. Oh no. Have it shaved. So like this, production, consumption, all the useless items.
Regarding what you said about the soul is, I can't remember exactly what you mentioned, but you mentioned that the soul is not the leader. And at some stage I had an experience where I can only describe it as a point. It felt to me as if it was some sort of metaphorical like alien. And it was basically like a parasite in my brain, like using my body to do things, using my body to like talk to people and change people through words, and it had no worries about like what is wrong today. It just felt as if like, oh, soon enough I'll make myself a little bit. And to me, it felt like what I understood from this experience was that the soul is in this realm to change things. Because that's the only difference between this realm and the other.
Yeah.
Because it can change everything at all today.
Sure. That's the only positive thing we can do. Otherwise, we are here. I'm looking for fulfillment. We're looking for happiness. And we'll get some, but we don't get fulfillment. There's a difference between happiness and fulfillment. I'm so happy to see you all, so happy. But I'm not fulfilled. Maybe for a little while, but not for more. So fulfillment comes on the spiritual plane. That's the point. Because the soul cannot be fulfilled in the material world, only on the spiritual plane. And you find the same thing in Pensée from Pascal, Blaise Pascal. Same principle, that in this world one can never find fulfillment without a spiritual goal. So even our Western philosophers agree. But here East and West meet today, and I think I'm still, I have to stop at 10 to 2 so that we can vacate the room and someone in the back and take, steal a few minutes. Huh?
Go for it.
Go for it, huh? What time did you leave? 2 or?
Stop by now. You've got 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Yeah, so real spiritual life, obviously, you just can't leave it out. That is the point. You know, it's part of the modern society, as the industrialization came up, that men sort of start to turn atheist, and started to try and do it without religion. Prior to that, you see all over the world, religions are flourishing and so on, in any culture. But it's when we turn modern, that we throw it out, because now we have machines, so that we can ourselves control things. We play God. So that's foolishness, because although we think we are so powerful, actually, we create a mess for ourselves. Look at what we did to ecology, and wait a while with the genetic engineering. The results will still come. So, I'm old, so I'm poor. But it's like that. So, all these things come about when we forget that life must have a spiritual foundation. And it doesn't mean that you can't enjoy the sunshine or whatever, that you can't have ice cream. You can. But ice cream is, believe it or not, ice cream is not the all in all. I live for ice cream. You can write a book about it. I gave my life for ice cream. That's not, that sounds like a Mickey Mouse story. Walt Disney, all happy with balloons and plastic nose. So happy with Mickey Mouse. Are you sure? Are you sure that that's really enough? I reckon there's more to the world than Mickey Mouse. Thank you very much. Hope to meet you.